Thank you, Naomi, for that welcome, and President and Conference, let me add my welcome to the conference of a growing and confident Alliance Party. Welcome to our guests, to the media, to the exhibitors, to all our members who are here. And let me give a special welcome at this stage to those who stepped forward this year and joined Alliance, to those who are stepping forward to serve this community by standing for election this year for the first time, and indeed to thank those who stood for elections on so many times in the past. While I'm at it, let me thank the staff team, Debbie and Sharon, and all the staff team and volunteers who've made this conference such a success so far, and what a conference it's been. Because for those of you who missed the panel of five young candidates this morning, you really missed a treat. And to those who've just spoken, to Stephen and Alan, to Paula, to Duncan, to Anna and Naomi, what a set of speeches and what a vision they set out. I tell you, I think we had at least five or six future leaders of the party on the platform this morning. But Alan, you will have to stand for election. This year we do see a growing band of activists, despite the intimidation and despite the threats that our members have faced. So let's also thank those family and friends who stand by our team, whether they're stepping forward as part of the campaign team or providing that vital support in the background that we all need. I'm immensely proud of this party. I'm proud of the work that Naomi does at Westminster and for her constituents in East Belfast. I'm proud of the work being done by councillors delivering for local people in so many different areas. I'm proud of the work being done by our MLAs in their constituencies, in assembly committees, on the floor of the chamber, and on the wide range of issues that affect the lives of everyone in Northern Ireland. I marvel at the commitment of our team, the elected representatives and the small staff team that supports each of us and in Stormont, because their output and their impact easily rivals, no, it doesn't rival, it exceeds that of far larger assembly parties. I'm proud of the changes that two Alliance ministers have made in two key departments, big steps forward for justice and for employment and learning. Alliance people are certainly stepping forward, but sadly, Northern Ireland isn't taking the big steps forward that we all need. We've had far too many examples of failure, failure on the part of the executive. And if it's not plain failure, it's the sort of claims of steps forward that prove to be nothing but an illusion. So let me talk about our achievements, Alliance achievements, achievements to move this community forward. Stephen Farrow has already had the chance this morning to outline some of the work he's doing to deliver real change to the Department for Employment and Learning. He's investing in higher education, freezing tuition fees, creating many more undergraduate and postgraduate places. But he's also delivering the skills necessary to transform our economy and in particular developing new systems of apprenticeships and youth training. And he's tackling unemployment and economic inactivity, including investing in and creating better opportunities for our young people. In the Department of Justice, we're well on the way to fundamental reform of the prison service to make it fit for the 2020s and not the 1970s. We're speeding up justice, concentrating on dealing with young offenders. We're dealing with the legacy of overspending on legal aid while at the same time protecting access to justice. And we continue to improve community safety and support the essential work of the police. And when commentators say that there are more interface structures now than there were at the time of the Good Friday Agreement, just remember that there are six fewer now than when I became Justice Minister. Because that's what it means to have an Alliance Minister delivering on Alliance priorities. In the Assembly, Anna Lowe single-handedly gained a major victory for the environment by amending the Marine Bill to promote sustainable development. It wasn't the Environment Committee position, there wasn't executive agreement, but Anna persisted, she argued the Alliance case, and she won. And as Naomi's just reminded us, let's not forget that from the start of this year, the funding of political parties in Northern Ireland has been cleaned up. As a result of Naomi's work in Westminster, all donations over the specified amount made since the 1st of January 2014 will have to be made public in the future. Eventually, after pressure, as she said, her proposal was adopted by the government. But as one MP observed rather wryly, the government amendment was in fact the amendment of the member for Belfast East. Another single-handed victory, richly deserved, long overdue, because it's an end to the concerns about the culture of brown envelopes. But in contrast to our work across the executive, there's been so many letdowns, so much smoke and mirrors, that we've either forgotten them or just grown used to them. Remember the great statement from Peter Robinson and Martin McGuinness in the summer of 2012, claiming agreement on a whole raft of issues? It promised a good relations strategy, the so-called CSI strategy, in September 2012, and that strategy never appeared. It promised legislation to establish the Education and Skills Authority. That never happened. A welfare reform bill never happened, even though it's now costing us several million pounds a month in lost funding from the Treasury. Or what about the new strategy, the inelegantly called Together Building a United Community? A hollow commitment to shared housing, which they didn't deliver for Girdwood in North Belfast. Promises of 10 shared education campuses, not integrated education, to make a real difference. I believe that the only real progress has been in the United Youth Programme, inevitably led by Stephen Farry's department. So, yes, there have been some achievements, but not the big steps that we needed. Not, for example, a shared sports stadium that could have been talked around the world if we'd had it in time for the World Police and Fire Games of last year. Not the advances in education that would have seen us tackle the fact that 2 out of every 5 teenagers leaving school do so without basic reading and writing skills, or half the children in disadvantaged areas start school without the basic skills that they need. Whatever became of the Single Equality Bill, the endless impasse over education reform, a Languages Act, the list goes on, taking us through the collapse last summer of the Maze Long Kesh Peace Centre and to New Year's Eve, and the failure to resolve the issues around flags, parades, and dealing with the past. I know that many people were bitterly disappointed that the House talks failed to reach agreement. I can assure you that no one was more disappointed than the Alliance team who represented you at those long and at times tortuous discussions. At times? Don't forget, the House process was conceived by this party. It was we who proposed such a process, and the DUP and Sinn Féin who initially dismissed the idea. Only when pressure came on in the run-up to President Obama's visit for the G8 did they relent, and they sought to present such a process as their own idea. However, while our plan was for an independent chair to lead a process to deal with all the outstanding issues around the shared future, OFM-DFM narrowed it down to just the 3 issues, because real change will come when we see real constructive progress in all areas. In education, in housing, in youth work, and round interfaces. But whatever the origins of the process, it proved an opportunity that this community could not afford to miss. We desperately needed, we still desperately need, a resolution to the issue of flags, parades, and the past. But what we didn't need, indeed what we needed to avoid, was an apparent agreement that made no difference to these issues. So as soon as it emerged that other parties weren't prepared to face up to the issues around flags, issues that go to the very heart of creating a shared community and dealing with the violence on the streets, we made it clear to Richard Haass that we wouldn't be able to endorse an agreement that ducked the issue. What Northern Ireland needed out of the Haass process wasn't an agreement for agreement's sake, but an agreement that would make a real difference, that would allow our community to take a big step forward. An agreement in which politicians faced up to the task of leadership and faced down the extremes to whom they've so often pandered in the past. So we were bitterly disappointed by the outcome, not just because it proved impossible to get an agreement at all, but also because in those last few days between Christmas and the New Year clearly showed that if an agreement was possible amongst the other parties, it would have ducked many of the biggest, most difficult issues. Northern Ireland needs no more ducking of those issues. We've had enough of the small steps, the no steps, and the backward steps that have been the hallmark of politics since the Good Friday Agreement. Just think back to that time, those of us who are old enough to remember, because in this growing youthful party, there are people in this room who don't remember back to the Good Friday Agreement. Good Friday 1998 was a big step. A big step endorsed by the people and big enough that we did not slip back from it. Because real change happens in Northern Ireland when big steps have been taken. Just think of the patent reforms to policing a decade ago, or the introduction of fair employment legislation under Alliance leadership 40 years ago. So let's talk about some big steps that we should be taking now, the big steps for 2014. First of all, we really need to stop talking about the past and start work on dealing with it. We have a moral duty to those who were victims, especially to those who were bereaved, to provide them with justice. And if justice is not possible, to seek ways of providing with truth, if that helps to provide comfort. The proposals of Richard Haass and Megan O'Sullivan went a long way towards that. The Historical Investigations Unit, combining the legacy work of the Historic Inquiries team and the Police Ombudsman, together with the Independent Commission for Information Recovery, were in line with the proposals previously made by the Eames-Bradley report and by the work of the Victims Commission. But there's just more than a moral obligation. There's also a legal obligation to report to the Council of Ministers about remedying the defects in processing some inquests. The Department of Justice has done preparatory work, but it needs the agreement of the executive to take this forward in legislation, and there is no excuse for further delay. Rather than ducking the issue of flags, murals, and other paramilitary symbols, let's face up to that issue. Let's call it what it is: sectarian, paramilitary-led marking out of territory. It's not about culture. It's not about historical commemoration. As far as I'm concerned, a UVF flag is a UVF flag, even if it says 1912 in the corner, and anyone who believes otherwise is being totally naive. And if you want a perfect example of small steps versus big steps, think of the absurdity of the calls for political parties to remove election posters from the route of the Giro d'Italia, while enormous murals of masked men loom out on gable walls, pointing at guns at anyone who passes, reminding locals and tourists alike who's in charge, who's welcome, and who should keep their heads down or stay away. Conference, if we want to send out a better image of Northern Ireland, we'll be better taking down the paintings of gunmen and putting up posters of Anna Lou. And yet, what happened when Anna pointed out the irony of that? Vile, racist abuse poured onto the internet, proving beyond any doubt the motivation of those who put the murals up, and more weasel words from unionist politicians, weasel words about culture, weasel words about not rocking the boat, and the all-too-familiar bots that always appear after every condemnation of threats against our elected representatives. It's time to step forward and take Northern Ireland back from these people. It's time to show them the kind of community we want for future generations and not the paramilitaries on the murals. In fact, it's long beyond time when these organisations simply told their members to go home, look after their families and their own business, and let Northern Ireland get on with the future. So, conference, let's take those big steps. Let's bring in a system that allows anyone to display legal flags and symbols for a defined period, but then to remove them afterwards. Let's get agreement between the political parties that any mural with a paramilitary on it should be painted out. Let's insist that only murals of a genuinely civic nature be allowed and get rid of the symbols of hatred and division once and for all. Let's have a system for regulating parades that provides a fresh start, both in structures and behaviours. Let's have an enforceable code of conduct that recognises and rewards good behaviour by both paraders and protesters and punishes bad and unlawful behaviour. Let's have a reduction in the number of MLAs, not in time for the 2021 elections, but for the 2016 elections. The necessary legislation has been passed at Westminster. Let's get on with it, because we do not need 108 MLAs to run Northern Ireland. And let's not settle for shared youth camps for 1 week of the year. Let's strive for shared communities all year round. Because those are some of the steps, the big steps that Northern Ireland needs to take, needs its politicians to lead on. But I doubt if our current crop of politicians is willing to take many of those steps without external pressure. And the people do have the opportunity to apply that pressure four times over the next 3 years in a full round of elections, because elections can often be how change happens. If you're in any doubt about it, look at the lengths that other parties go in order to maintain their electoral base. Just take a look at what's going on in North Belfast, where there appear to be no depths to which political parties will not go in order to maintain their traditional core vote. What on earth are the elected representatives of the DUP and the UUP, supposedly parties of law and order, doing sitting on a committee organising an unlawful protest camp, illegally occupying public land, a protest that has cost the taxpayer millions since last July and diverted stretched police resources away from tackling crime and terrorism? A protest... and that protest deliberately located at a sensitive interface. I'll tell you what they're doing. They're there under the direction of the leadership of their parties, desperately trying to play to the electoral audience and ensure that their votes hold up. The camp has been become a platform for which those two parties, joined by the PUP, the TUV and even UKIP, try to outdo one another in an electorally driven competition to make the most outrageous, the most destructive and the most dangerous claims about the threat to the unionist community, all of them baseless, but all of them designed to gain votes.